Suta uvacha upadharya vachastasya Bhagavan Bhakta Vatsalaha Pandavam idam kartum Dronir astram abhujyata Suta Goswami said, having patiently heard her words, Lord Sri Krishna, who was always very affectionate to his devotees, could at once understand that Ashwatthama, the son of Dronacharya, had thrown the Brahmashtra to finish the last life in the Pandava family. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The Lord is impartial in every respect, but still He is inclined towards His devotees, because there is a great necessity for this, for everyone's well-being. The Pandava family was a family of devotees, and therefore the Lord wanted them to rule the world. That was the reason He vanquished the rule of the company of Duryodhana and established the rule of Maharaj Yudhisthira. Therefore, He also wanted to protect Maharaj Parikshit, who was lying in embryo. He did not like the idea that the world should be without the Pandavas, the ideal family of devotees. Having patiently heard her words, Lord Sri Krishna, who was always very affectionate to his devotees, could at once understand that Ashwatthama, the son of Dronacharya, had thrown the Brahmastra to finish the last life of the Pandava family. It is herein explained by Guru Maharaj that Lord Sri Krishna is impartial in every respect, but still He is inclined toward His devotees. Samoham sarva-bhuteshu nimedveshostinapriya ye bhajanti tamam bhakya. That Krishna's partiality toward His devotees is not simply for the purpose of the devotees. Because whether a devotee or lives or dies really makes very little difference. If a devotee lives, he serves the Lord, and if such a great devotee dies, he goes back home, back to Godhead, to serve the Lord. Srila Prabhupada would tell the story of the astrologer, the prophet, that came to a town, a kingdom, and he gave benedictions to various personalities. To the prince, he gave the benediction, better you live. To the brahmachari, he gave the benediction, better you die. to the butcher, he gave the benediction, better that you neither live nor die. And to the great Vaishnava, he said, better you either live or die. And then he explained to the people the significance of these benedictions. A prince is enjoying so much the luxuries of life, so much gratification of his mind and senses. But because in order to maintain this sense gratification, he's engaging in so many sinful activities, exploiting so many others. When he dies, he is going to have to suffer the karmic reaction of all the anxiety he's causing other living beings. So better he lives. Now you're enjoying, but in the future you will suffer hellishly. Better you live. A materialistic person who does not understand the principles of religion does not feel himself accountable to his activities. Whatever we appear to be able to get away with, we feel we are successful. Because what feels good, do it. It does not matter what conditions you create for other people's lives or what natural laws you violate, as long as you can get away with it and enjoy now. And oftentimes such people, for the time being, they really appear to be enjoying better than anyone. And a fool becomes envious of such other fools. Svavidvaraha strakaraya samsuta purushapashu. People who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and axes, they glorify and look up to other people who are like bigger dogs, hogs, camels, and asses, who create a nice situation for themselves now, but in the meanwhile, they are creating a hellish existence for the future. Many of the people that you see in your life, on the roads, or in your homes, who are suffering terribly, people with terrible disease, people who have utter poverty, people who are just weeping, crying, destitute, who come to you with such desperation and misery in their eyes. They are the same people that oftentimes in their previous life, they had big, big cars, they had big, big mansions, they had so much prestige, and they were engaging in so many sinful activities to get it, and everybody around was thinking, I want to be like them. Why should I be moral and good when by being crooked you could be like them? But don't think those people that now you pity and think, I wish I could help them. They're suffering so bad it's beyond my control to even rescue them from their misery. They are generally the same people. Just one stage later. So a devotee looks into the future. A devotee does not judge a book by looking at its cover. A devotee looks into the content of a person's life and knows that whatever may appear now is very, very, very temporary. But what the future will bring is more important. So therefore, no matter what, for one's own personal sense gratification, a knowledgeable person will never resort to immoral or sinful activities, knowing what type of suffering there will be. You can recognize. So this prophet told the prince, better you live.
because now you have a big kingdom. Everyone bows down to you. You have beautiful clothes. You have wonderful jewels. You have so many servants. You have everything everyone wants materially. But because you're engaging in immoral activities, in your next birth, everyone will pity you. You will be suffering so desperately that people will think, I wish I could help him, but he's beyond my capacity to rescue from suffering. Now people envy you, but in the future you will envy everyone. Just for the basic necessities of survival, you will be flung in an ocean of grief. Better you live. And for the brahmachari, better you die. Why? Because you've given up everything. Sleeping on a hard floor or on the ground, taking the position like a beggar on behalf of the spiritual master, giving up the pleasures of life, the pleasures of family, the pleasures of sex, the pleasures of acquisition, the pleasures of property, performing so many austerities. It's a hard life, very difficult life. But because you're performing this activity, detaching yourself from everything material and doing so much good seva, when you die, you'll go back home, back to Godhead. So better you die. Of course, in Krishna consciousness, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so kind that he made the process of tapasya so wonderful, so blissful, that it's good if brahmacharis live. Certainly when they die, they'll go back to Godhead if they're sincere. But while they're living, they're chanting, dancing, and feasting. That is Mahaprabhu's mercy. And he's giving, even in the most simple, austere situation, he's giving such blissfulness. And to the butcher, he said, better you neither live nor die, because now you are surrounded by death and blood and the screaming of the agony of others. It's a hellish condition. And because of the agony that you are inflicting on others, you will have to suffer hellish existences. And all that agony must come upon you. All that bloodshed will have to be drawn from your own body. So better you neither live nor die. But for the sadhu, he explained, the pure devotee of the Lord, the true Vaishnava, he said, either you live or die, it doesn't matter. Because you're not attached to your body anyway. And you're not attached to this world in any way. You're only attached to serving Krishna and pleasing Krishna. And in your life, you're serving Krishna and pleasing Krishna. And after this body falls, you're going to go back to Godhead and serve Krishna and please Krishna. So what is the difference? There's really no difference between living and dying for a great devotee. So when Krishna says he protects his devotees, why should he want to simply protect the temporary body of a devotee? Because if a devotee, if a great devotee dies, he goes back to Godhead. He gets a spiritual body, Satchidananda, to play with Krishna in the groves of Vrindavan, in one of the five primary rasas. Is that such a bad thing? It's actually a very nice thing. By keeping a devotee in this life, he's actually keeping him from that abode of the Lord. Certainly that devotee of the Lord isn't always in the heart of his pure devotee, but he has to engage in so many difficult situations in this world. The Pandavas, instead of living in the spiritual world enjoying with Krishna, just see what type of tragedies they had to undergo at one after another in their life. So would it have not been more protective of Krishna to just send them back to Godhead than to keep them in this situation of this material world? And do you think the Pandavas are attached to being in this world? The evidence that they're not is after Krishna left the planet and they saw that they didn't really have that personal service to Krishna anymore, they just gave up everything. Yudhisthira, Arjuna, Bhima, Nakula, Sahadev, they just gave up their kingdom, gave up their riches. They put on the robes of of sadhus and they went to Himalayas to give up this world. So they had no concern. So when Krishna says he protects his devotees, why? Why doesn't he just send them back to Godhead? Why should he protect them in this world? Why not let Ashwatthama kill them and send them back to Godhead? You think the devotee's attached? You think devotee's concerned? This is a very important understanding. Because for the devotee's sake, it doesn't matter whether they live or die. They're with Krishna. But Srila Prabhupada is so wonderfully revealing to us why Krishna protects his devotees in this world. It's for the benefit of the living beings in this world. Srila Prabhupada says he is inclined toward his devotees because there is a great necessity for this, for everyone's well-being. Because the Pandavas were such perfect and wonderful examples of surrendered devotees to the Lord, their example was establishing hope and direction for all living beings within this universe. And it was actually for our sake that he protected the Pandavas. It wasn't for the Pandavas' sake. It was for our sake that he protected Prahlad. Because Prahlad, if Hiranyakashipu would have killed him, do you think Prahlad was attached to that little 5-year-old body of his? He could have immediately gotten a spiritual body in the spiritual world. It was for our sake that he protected Prahlad. For all living beings in this world. Because a devotee doesn't matter whether he lives or dies. He's with Krishna. But it matters for us whether such great devotees live or die. Because we need their example. We need their teachings. We need their blessings and their grace. I remember when Srila Prabhupada would sometimes become very ill. In fact, last night, during this wedding, it's amazing how Krishna arranges things. I didn't at all want to go downstairs, but they forced me to go downstairs, so I went downstairs. And when I was downstairs, the devotee who got married introduced me to his cousin. His first cousin's husband. And he said to me, I lived in London and I knew Prabhupada. He said, in fact, when Prabhupada came to London, it was in 1977. He was very ill and I performed an operation on him. And when I performed this minor operation and relieved him of some difficulty he was having, and they wanted me, he was so pleased with me, he wanted me to travel with him back to India and be his personal doctor, but I wasn't able to do it at that time because I had so many commitments in England. But I spent much time with him and talked with him, and he was very pleased with the operation I performed on him. And the person getting married, who is his cousin brother, he said, "I never knew you knew Prabhupada. I never knew you performed operation on Prabhupada." You know the story, in 1977, he knew the exact date and everything. When Prabhupada was practically on his deathbed, and the devotees in England invited him to come for a festival. So he said, "I must satisfy the desire of my devotees." And everyone was saying, "But how can you do this?" He said, "No, I must. Devotees want me, I must go." So he had to be carried to the airport, he had to be carried everywhere. And he was having tremendous physical difficulty. He had to get an operation while he was there. He used to continue on. And the person who performed perhaps the last operation on Prabhupada, he just was here last night. We met him, very wonderful, just appreciating Srila Prabhupada's qualities so much. Now he lives in Dadar, he's a surgeon. So when Srila Prabhupada would be put in these situations, we understood that he's so old and so many difficulties he's enduring. And if he leaves this world, he's going to be in the groves of Vrindavan with Kunja Bihari, Krishna, dancing and playing in an eternally youthful body. So why do we want him to stay here? Not for him, for us, for the world. We are begging Krishna, please, if it is your desire, keep Srila Prabhupada here. Today is the disappearance day of Sripad Madhvacharya. Such a great personality. He was Avatar of Vayu, which means he was also Avatar of Bhima and Hanuman. Very powerful personality, powerful in every way, especially in his preaching. Because, you see, Maya attacks us in many ways. Bhima, with his mighty club, he was able to conquer even the greatest, greatest demoniac kings and rulers and rakshasas who were trying to spread irreligion within the world and cause disruption to people's lives. And no one could defeat him. He was so powerful. Madhvacharya, he saw that a greater weapon of Maya than just big kings like Duryodhana and his 100 brothers, or 99 brothers, and rakshasas, more dangerous than that was the Mayavad philosophy, spreading so much irreligion, anti-propaganda against devotion to God. So instead of using a club, he used argumentation and conviction and sastric evidence. And with the same power as Bhima, he completely annihilated all these false philosophies to preserve religion and preserve the true spirit of bhakti. And he lived such a wonderful life, exemplary, showing everyone that the conclusion of our human existence his simple loving devotion to the Supreme Personality of God. On one hand, he was such a fantastically powerful scholar that nobody could stand before him without being destroyed philosophically unless they accept the principles of pure bhakti and accept the principles that the absolute truth is a person. But on the other hand, how he would compose beautiful, beautiful songs in glorification of Sri Krishna. And he would sing with such a sweet, loving voice that was so attractive to hear. And how he would so lovingly and gently, tenderly worship his deity of Krishna, Udupi Krishna, who's Krishna who was a little boy stealing butter. And how he would worship with such love and devotion, how he was so gentle and kind to all those who took to the path of bhakti, but how he was like a thunderbolt to anyone averse to the principles of bhakti. He traveled throughout all of India, and he established the true teachings of the Vedic Shastras, and he converted millions of people to take to the path of Dvaita philosophy, understanding that we are eternally the servants of the Lord. The Jivatma is eternally subordinate servant of Krishna. There's no question of even imagining the conception that we can ever become God or be one with God in any way, except as his eternal servant, one in love, one in devotion. That is the only oneness we have. And he was so dearly loved by all of his followers. And it was on this day that he disappeared from the world. In Udupi, he was at the Anandeshwar Mandir. That place is still, many of you have seen. He was sitting, giving a lecture from Upanishad, Aitareya Upanishad, establishing the principle of pure devotional service. And before everyone's eyes, his jatar just fell on the platform and his body disappeared. He explained to his devotees before this that soon I will be leaving you to return to my Guru Maharaj Vedavyas in Badrikashram in a spiritual form. He said, but my teachings and my spirit will always be with you here in Udupi. So of course the devotees, they were weeping, they were crying. It was like the end of the world, that their savior, their master, their guru, their life and soul had left. Narottam Das Thakur prays in his song to the departed Vaishnavas, how when the Vaishnavas leave to go in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, they go to join that great dancer, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They leave us alone in this world. We break our head against stone in the anguish of separation. Why? Narottam Das is explaining, they have all gone to join that great golden dancer, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his eternal lila. So why we are breaking our head against stones in anguish? Not for them, but for the world who is without them. Of course, they leave behind their teachings and they leave behind their example. And such great souls
They live in our hearts through their teachings and example.
As the Pandavas, Krishna protected them for some time physically, just so that they could perform their activities, so they could teach the world by their example. And those exemplary pastimes that they performed while Krishna preserved them in this world were so glorious and wonderful that they are living with us even today, 5,000 years later, whenever we hear of them. So yes, it is actually Krishna's mercy upon all the conditioned souls of the world that he protects his devotees physically for some time, just so that by their example and teachings, they can give us direction, they can give us spiritual life and hope. And we are so grateful to Krishna. So grateful. Because who are we? We have defied Krishna. We have abandoned Krishna for so many lifetimes. We have ignored his beckoning, his calling, and so many opportunities. But still, he sends his representatives to endure the difficulties of this world for our sake. And he keeps them here for some time to give hope, purpose to our life, to give us entrance into the spiritual world. And a devotee is naturally always thanking Krishna for the association of Vaishnavas, association of Guru Maharaj and the Vaishnavas. A devotee never thinks that I deserve such association, that I deserve such a relationship with the great souls. It is his causeless mercy. It is by his will only that these souls are here. It is by his will only that they are giving us the chance to become great souls ourselves in his loving service. So we should not be envious of devotees. We should be grateful for the opportunity to see devotees sincerely trying to serve the Lord, because through their sincere service, they are giving hope to our life. They are giving direction, strength, faith to our life. So Ashwatthama has sent the Brahmastra. Why? With that Brahmastra, he wanted to kill the five Pandavas and their only descendant, Parikshit Maharaj. And because he threw it in such a quick way, it will be explained that actually the Pandavas were not prepared to counteract it. They were not themselves prepared to protect themselves. What to speak of the child in the womb, Parikshit. So Uttara, who was so much concerned with her baby child, we discussed yesterday, she prayed, "My dear Lord, let this fiery iron arrow coming towards me, let it burn me and kill me personally, but please protect the child in my womb." This was her very devoted motherly affection, which is so much appreciated by all noble Vaishnavas. So she was praying to Krishna in this way. And Srila Prabhupada translates,
that Krishna, having heard her words patiently, but Krishna's position is so transcendental. All of a sudden, there's this Brahmastra weapon, which is more powerful than any atomic bomb, and so lethal that it never misses its target, never. Whoever it's directed toward must die. Just like in the Second World War, they were trying to kill Mr. Adolf Hitler, and they were bombing Berlin and so many parts of Germany where he was. They were throwing so many thousands of bombs just trying to kill this man. But he was always hiding somewhere. He was always either underground in some shelter or somewhere else. And they killed hundreds and thousands of other innocent people and destroyed so much property and everything else, but they never got him. Ultimately, according to what historians say, he was just so frustrated that he committed suicide. Even though he was the greatest conqueror of the century. He brought the whole world down to their knees in fear. He was about to take over the world. Just made a few minor mistakes by Krishna's arrangement. Otherwise, he would have conquered the world. There was no army on the planet that could resist him. But he made some mistakes. And ultimately, although he came to the top, he killed himself. But in any case, all the bombs, they couldn't get them. And recently, the Gulf War, America was bombing Iraq, Baghdad. And their main target was Saddam Hussein. If they could get him, they don't have to do anything else. And they were throwing so many, they were billions of dollars worth of bombs were going. Scud missiles and other bombs by the great benediction of technology. People were watching it on television, sitting in their living rooms in the suburbs of New York City. Just see the bombs going off, everyone dying and being destroyed and buildings burning. Of course, Sanjay also had that televisionist vision. He was watching, he was sitting in the palace with Dhritarashtra, and he was showing him all of the people fighting on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. But he didn't require CNN TV. He just had special mystic powers. So they were trying to kill this Saddam Hussein. So many bombs everywhere, so many people being killed, so many property being destroyed. But they never got him. They never hit him. He escaped. That's the difference between gross technology and subtle mystic technology. The Brahmastra is more powerful than any of these bombs, and all these bombs. But it's so accurate that once you throw it, it goes right to the... Unless someone can counteract it, whoever you chant the name of with that mantra of the Brahmastra, it will kill that person. There's no hope. Either you have to counteract the bomb itself, or you'll be destroyed. But no one can escape a Brahmastra. And nobody else gets touched. Innocent people aren't destroyed. That Brahmastra was aimed toward the five Pandavas and toward their only descendant within the womb of Uttara. And it just happened so fast that the Pandavas and Parikshit were helpless. They didn't know what to do.
It was coming at them at such a speed we cannot understand. And Uttara is running to Krishna saying, please save the child in my womb. She's in great haste, desperation. And it said that Krishna patiently heard her words. Krishna is not bound by the limitations we have. For us, when there's an emergency, either it has to be done now or never. But Krishna controls time itself. If Krishna so desires, he can make a moment extend to millions of years. He has proven that. In Vrindavan, when he was dancing with the Braja Gopis during the Ras Lila, it was so enjoyable that they did not want this Ras dance to end. Neither the Gopis or Krishna. The Gopis, all of their desires were unlimitedly fulfilled. They were in the beautiful forests of Vrindavan with Radha and Krishna dancing. And they were so happy to be doing this, offering this seva of their lives, offering every aspect of their life for the pleasure of Krishna. And Krishna saw that the gopis were so pleased, and he became so pleased. So why one night? So Krishna made that one night extend to one night of Brahma, which is several billions of years. But the rest of the world just went on in one night. It's not when that one night lasted billions of years. It's not like at the end of the night, the next morning, all of the cows and everybody else was dead billions of years before. And there was ancient ruins and everything. It was as if the night ended and everything was right there waiting. It was, according to the calendar in Vrindavan, it was the next day. So Krishna can put a whole night of Brahma into one of our nights. He can make one night last billions and billions of years and not in any way change the time duration of that night. How is that possible? Because Krishna is the controller of time. For us, when a minute is a minute, an hour is an hour, and there's no power on earth that can change that. Because we are not masters of time. We are all subordinate to time. So Krishna can do anything. So as this immediate crisis was taking place, Krishna was hearing patiently, knowing that if Krishna wants to protect his devotees, nothing can harm them. And if Krishna wants to punish a wicked person, nothing can protect them. That is Krishna's supreme position. Purushottam, Parameshwara, Bhagavan. Is there any questions? Having patiently heard her words, Lord Sri Krishna, who was always very affectionate to his devotees, could at once understand that Ashwatthama, the son of Dronacharya, had thrown the Brahmastra to finish the last life of the Pandava family.
How is that Brahmastra is such a fast weapon, and they were all in the same arena? They're not far away from each other. But still, Uttara had enough time to understand that it's coming to her, and she has enough time to come to Krishna crying and thing like that. How it is possible?
Krishna made it possible.
Thank you.